decide not to do it.
I'm going to draw an engine on February 21st.
Ready to go.
The Commission on Aging meeting will come to order. Today is a special meeting. We have our counselors here as our guests. Let's go around and introduce ourselves. I'm Marjorie Liddell with the Commission on Aging.
Mark Bolt, County Council.
Marian Anderson, Commission on Aging.
Donna Roberge, Commission on Aging.
Jeannie Stewart, Clark County Council.
Herb Maxey, Commission on Aging.
Julie Olson, Clark County Council.
John Blum, Clark County Council.
Chuck Freer, Commission on Aging.
Linda O'Leary, Commission on Aging.
Eileen Quiring, Clark County Council.
Allie Harris, Commission on Aging. Pat Channing, Commission on Aging.
Thank you. I need a motion to approve our agenda for today.
So moved.
Second. All those in favor?
Aye.
The motion is carried to approve the agenda. I need a motion to approve the minutes dated December 13th.
So moved.
Is there a second?
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
The minutes are approved. And now it's time for the report. I'll move over to the podium for that. This is the fourth annual report of the Commission on Aging. Clark County Commissioners created the Commission on Aging in 2012, following an 18-month study in which more than two dozen community members from across the county participated. This diagram illustrates the work in which we are engaged. Education, awareness, and advocacy are the means by which we carry out our charge to provide leadership to manage and implement the Aging Readiness Plan. Community engagement is identified in the Aging Readiness Plan has been completed with the creation of the new Time Banking Program, Our Impact. This program helps prevent and or reduce the feeling of isolation as people age. The Commission on Aging developed the county's first Time Bank in May of 2015. The Our Impact Time Bank allows neighbors to exchange skills or services without money changing hands. It now has 147 members, including 9 nonprofits, 3 neighborhood associations, 1 farmers market, and 3 public programs. In addition to our regular meetings where the public attends and participates, we also have had a presence at local city councils and other venues. Last year, Bill Ritchie, our immediate past chair, provided an update on the work of the Commission on Aging to all city councils in Clark County. And in behalf of people who are older in Clark County, we were on hand when Clark County Council proclaimed Older Americans Month. In May, COA bade farewell to 2 longtime members, Karen Wall and Bob Holdridge, who had been active since the days of the task force preceding the creation of COA. Most of this report will be about what we have learned and are recommending in regard to housing. Transportation will be a future focus because having a variety of options to get around for people of all ages, abilities, and incomes determines our ability to connect with others and maintain independence. Healthy communities also will be a future focus because it is important to have access to parks and recreation and neighborhoods where everyone has the ability to move about. Other examples include community gardens, public trails, and walking paths. Supportive services will be our focus for 2017. These are some of the areas we will be learning about this year from our community experts and are looking forward to any related issues the public may bring forward to us and any suggestions you, the counselors, have for us today. In the 2012 Aging Readiness Plan, many ideas and suggestions were organized and recorded from task force discussions including a chapter on housing. The ideas on housing at the time were universal design guide, construction incentives, and potentially a mandate requiring some universal design features in new homes. Members of the Commission on Aging worked with county staff to develop the Universal Design Information Guide that has gained in popularity as a way of communicating with professionals and the public. 2,000 copies have been made and distributed, and more copies have been downloaded online. In 2015, the Commission decided to revisit the ideas from the housing section in the Aging Readiness Plan, but to broaden the conversation to include all aspects of housing. To do that, we set aside our 2016 meetings to educate ourselves and others, learn from community experts, seek public comment, and identify direction toward a stronger housing market. Our annual report outlines some highlights of what we learned from our housing series. One of the major benefits of hearing from 10 community experts is that it created a forum for members of the Commission on Aging and members of the public to ask questions and share comments. This cross-section of experts provided quantitative and qualitative information. Members of the public told us what was important to them on a wide range of housing-related issues. For example, the need for a more accessible home. One man in his 60s said with a sigh, "We have the money, but we can't find a home with a bedroom and full bathroom on the main floor." And many people my age are experiencing the same thing. Another member of the public, an elderly woman, choked back tears when she described how sad it was to see the homeless in her neighborhood, quote, reduced to a hefty bag as their home. Fear of high rents was another issue. Several women at one of our meetings openly wept as a friend of theirs spoke for them. Quote, "These women are scared the landlord will all of a sudden raise the rent and kick them out." From what we learned from experts in the community, these are major findings. The demand for housing that can adapt to the changing needs of residents continues to outpace the supply. An AARP survey found that 87% of people prefer to retire in place and will need accessible, affordable housing. The needs of boomers converge with the wants of millennials. What the public wants does not converge with what the housing industry provides. Incorporating accessible elements in new construction is easier and cheaper than a remodel. According to Aaron Murphy, an architect who is a certified aging in place specialist and one of our presenters, remodeling a home into a forever home would allow a resident to stay at home 10 to 15 years longer with part-time care and potentially save a resident up to $500,000. He also believes that adding universal design features in a new home costs virtually nothing. Depending on the source, costs of remodeling homes to feature universal design or visitability vary according to type of housing and where one lives. Estimates typically range from tens of thousands of dollars to much, much more. We have three recommendations. This is the first one. Encourage the construction of new single-family homes that accommodate all residents and visitors, regardless of age or ability, by the inclusion of these design features. No step entryway. Doorways and hallways have minimum width of 36 inches and lever handles instead of doorknobs. Bathroom on the main level with reinforced wall backing and space for walker or wheelchair. Light switches, electrical outlets, thermostats mounted no higher than 48 inches and no lower than 18 inches. These are features that make a home visitable and that could benefit people of all ages, all abilities, and all incomes. Here's what those features mean to people. Convenience. For many people, from the parents who are carrying a baby in one hand and a sack of groceries in another, to those having a big appliance or furniture delivered, or to those with a short-term or long-term disability, convenience makes their lives easier. It also means that homes that everyone can visit or live in, regardless of short-term or long-term disabilities. It also means marketability for homes that feature visitability without losing curb appeal or home value. And for those who are older, it is much more economical to age in one's home than in assisted living or long-term care facility. Aaron Murphy estimates that it costs $4,500 a month to live in assisted living, and the median cost of a nursing home is $8,973. The economics are self-evident. This is our second recommendation. Although you will notice these recommendations are similar to and consistent with ideas in the Aging Readiness Plan, they better apply to current realities and do not call for mandates. Recognize the most practical and cost-effective means of providing visitable housing to meet the projected need is with new construction. Visitable is an emerging term meaning barrier-free housing accessible to all residents and visitors. Developing standard drawings detailing construction specifications for expedited permit application and approval. Identifying tax credits, incentives, and grants available for homeowners or builders. Identifying and publicizing programs such as VA assistance for disabled veterans. Unfortunately, it must be said that it has remained a fact for many years that the existing demand of affordable, accessible housing for people of all ages, abilities, and incomes dramatically exceeds the supply. It must also be said that the pace of people turning 65 nationally continues to be about 10,000 a day. One in five people in Clark County is 65, and by 2030, it may be one in four. 87% of people over 65 choose to age in place. The need is dramatic. This is our third recommendation. These are features that contribute to a livable community for people of all ages, all incomes, and abilities. Increased neighborhood functionality, connectivity, and accessibility with a combination of pedestrians, cars, bikes, and public transportation. Ensure all new neighborhoods are built with sidewalks and curb cuts. Ensure safety and access for fire and emergency medical responders to reach and transport residents. Develop funding strategies for priority sidewalk construction, improvement, and repair to connect existing neighborhoods. These are recommendations for a stronger marketplace as opposed to governmental policy. They encourage us to work together with each other and with our partners. Collaborate with the Building Industry Association to promote visitability choices for new and existing homes. Encourage the BIA to showcase a universal design home in the Clark County 2018 Parade of Homes. Work with housing nonprofits to ensure new affordable housing projects are built to allow access for all potential residents. Encourage all Clark County cities to adopt visitability programs with voluntary incentives and or code requirements. Continue work with the Clark County Association of Realtors to revise and increase designations for accessible features and the use of the multiple listing service. Some ideas are on the road to reality already. Evergreen Habitat for Humanities has invited the county to meet with its board to discuss integrating universal design features into future homes that they build. The Clark County Association of Realtors, through a survey, has identified a need within its membership to train its members on features of accessibility. The training will occur this year. What a wonderful benefit for the community for finding their dream home. Since last October, when Roy Johnson of Vancouver Housing Authority presented to COA, Vancouver residents successfully approved a housing levy known as Proposition 1. The VHA is researching the feasibility of including adaptable universal design elements in new construction. Thank you for co-hosting the February Housing Summit with us. As you know, 82 people attended and initial feedback is very positive. We all learned a great deal from our speakers and interaction with each other. Thank you for being here today. We look forward to discussion of our recommendations. Our hope is that you will fold these recommendations into work plans for further review, study, and ultimately, we would be thrilled if you adopt them. Before we begin our discussion, I want to do some thank yous. Thank you, the counselors, for the public forum you provide to the Commission on Aging for important issues to be discussed and to convey to you what we learn. Thank you to each of our presenters this past year who contributed time and knowledge. Special thanks to Bill Ritchie for his leadership as the immediate past chair in guiding us to establish a year-long focus on a topic as a way to delve deeply into the issues outlined in the Aging Readiness Plan. Thank you to Chuck Frayer and Marian Anderson for their extra effort into studying housing and leading the effort to craft our recommendations. A big thank you to Pat Janik for stepping in at the last minute as summit facilitator. Although it wasn't easy taking someone else's script, Pat brought to it on short notice great aplomb and enthusiasm. Thank you to Linda O'Leary for leading communications efforts to document what we have done this year. Thank you to the entire COA team. Each member has demonstrated active interest in housing and contributed to our annual report, and I know they will bring the same commitment to our supportive service series. Thank you to our two previous members, Karen Wall and Bob Holdridge, for their multi-year efforts on housing during their two terms on COA. Thank you to staff members, Colette Anderson and Jackie Camp, for their steadfast support to COA that stretches back to the Aging Readiness Task Force preceding the creation of COA. They bring valuable skill sets to our work, but we benefit most of all from the passion they display in reaching toward our goal of a livable community for all ages, all incomes, and all abilities. Thank you.
We now welcome reaction or questions from our counselors. Feel free to embrace this fully.
I guess I would have a question, probably for a couple of you. When we did our Green Standard building, Mike, when we did the code to be able to inspect that and then give it, you know, their seal of approval. John Gerard and the rest of them did all that, you know. And the realtors have really taken that. Would we do the same thing with aging in place or whatever you want to call it? It would be voluntarily, but we would have some sort. You would think that we would, I would think the process is already there for inspecting, so we're already in the homes. We just put another seal on or whatever we do. But it seems that we have the mechanism to do it pretty simple, and at the same time let the citizens, you know what we're going to. So
the is this on? We adopted the National Green Building Standard in 2010 on a voluntary basis. The county submitted at that time was not to perform inspections on the green building measures, but to become knowledgeable in the code and to help builders adopt new building practices.
Okay.
And that was primarily my job, to work with builders, and I still do it. It was, you know, during the recovery from the recession and all that, so there was a little bit of a slow uptake, but it's a very successful mechanism in place today, and I can see something with the visibility standards where we do outreach and education, we let the building industry know, and if the board is amenable to providing incentives to builders who want to meet a certain standard for visibility, whatever that incentive might be, I can see it being successful as well.
What, if anybody can answer this, I don't know, what has the county in the past
provided any incentives for any of the recommendations that you've given in previous years? And have we made code changes? Have we provided permitting, what have you?
I don't think so. Do you, Mark?
No, I don't think so. I mean, we have done some on streets, but that's about it. Some of your recommendations.
And I think part of that is we don't necessarily have to write it into code where it's an option to have these wider doorways and these other facilities. It's a very smart marketing idea. It is a very smart idea for builders to voluntarily do these things because exponentially their market for that house is broader. And frequently there may be one person who is less able in a household and another person who's more able. So this housing is the idea that you could go into a house that's already built for how you may be aging and what your needs may be in 5 years, 10 years, 15 years. That's a wonderful opportunity for builders to see that market. And I believe it is true that people do want to age in place. As people age, one of their biggest concerns is that they will have to be institutionalized in some, either a nursing home or some place that is not so familiar to them, maybe not so comfortable, maybe doesn't meet their needs, maybe doesn't have a place for having a couple pots of flowers or you know, that their family can't as readily come and visit them as they can in their own sort of customized facility. So as a person who's getting older and who's starting to think about these things more and more, there is a real market for this kind of housing that is built to accommodate many uses. And so I don't necessarily think that we need to provide financial incentives. I think this kind of a PowerPoint where builders who are building for a family of two or three or five right now with children and, you know, a treed neighborhood and all that sort of thing, that's one part of the market. But this is a whole nother developing part of the market, because as we stay more well for longer periods in our life, we're going to want alternatives other than the independence of our home that we bought and paid for, that's a huge home, that really the home has outgrown us, versus something that is more reasonable for our needs or wants. So I think it's a very exciting PowerPoint, and I think it brings up a lot of new thoughts and a lot of new ideas and adds a wonderful perspective on what the possibilities are. That's the most exciting part of it to me, is the possibilities of this. So I kind of went on and on, but
I thank you for the Housing Summit. It was a very interesting forum to learn many things from the presenter. He gave some great statistics. I noticed as I sat there and listened to the presenter, one of the things that was said at a table near me from individuals that are developers or in the building community, when he talked about single level housing or when they were talking about that, is it can't be done affordably right now in our where it just, it's really difficult to do. So my thought was, what the county can do to incentivize is to maybe possibly create zoning that in certain areas where there could be zero lot line patio homes, for instance, that would have a more universal design, maybe just a couple of bedrooms rather than, you know, three or four bedrooms, but that would accommodate, you know, some aging in place. And, you know, I think there would be a lot of people that would take advantage of that. It gives two things. One, it gives that accessibility in the one-level home, but also it doesn't have a huge yard that you have to take care of, but it also gives you space for that. The other thing is there are people, elderly, well, even myself, I'm not going to call myself elderly, would surely like to age in place. And if I had a large parcel out in the rural lands, one of the things that might help is if I could build an accessory dwelling unit on it, so that if I wanted to move into that and I could move my larger family into the main house, that could work too. And so the county can also work to create the ability for people to actually place accessory dwelling units in the rural area specifically, and mainly because even if the person didn't move out of their home and into this accessory dwelling unit, the other thing that it might provide is additional income for them to rent that out to somebody, to provide a little bit more income so that they could age in place where they are. And RMLS, the realtors, I think now they already do have something that does provide for accessibility, but I'm sure that they could improve on different things within that listing sheet that would tell more specifically how it's accessible, because I've looked for that before and it's really basically maybe one level.
And actually, the realtors came to us and they surveyed their own membership and found out that the way it's described now could be improved upon.
Yeah.
And they were the ones that volunteered and said, we will campaign in ourselves to raise awareness.
Yeah, that sounds good. Okay, thank you.
And a lot of that, what you were just talking about, is education, because there are, as Council Carter talked about, there are some tools in there, but no one knows about them. And so it's getting the word out that there is an option. Say this home has a main level bed and bath. It may not be a one level, but it has, you could live on one level.
Main if you want level.
To. Mm-hmm. And just to add one more thing on the conversation about accessory dwelling units and other use as a caretaker, if someone is mostly independent and just wants to be able to stay in their home but needs someone close by, there's another use. Yeah. I think I understand the focus on new housing. I think it would be interesting if the council is supportive of looking at some ways to incentivize remodeling. Because as Councilor Quirey talked about, land becomes so expensive, especially if you want to go with a single family. If the average sale price last year was a little over $300,000, it's probably 25% higher than that for a new home. So looking at, can we incentivize some of the permitting fees for redevelopment if people, you know, we create a scoring checklist or something where, look, if you get 10 points towards aging in place, there's some kind of break in permit fees. I think it's something that we can look at. But also to the affordability aspect, we're going to have the same thing for multifamily. You know, is there a way to incentivize people that are building apartments to say, you know, do 36-inch doors, do levers as opposed to knobs, some of those things? You know, I think if you're building a large apartment complex, if you're making just a small incentive per unit, that can add up for the developer and help spur, because as you talked about, some of these things are not big cost decisions. It's, you know, not maybe a dollar more handle to do a lever as opposed to a knob. But the market for every type of housing right now is so hot, builders and developers don't have to. A house doesn't even get to drywall before you have two or three people wanting to buy it. So the idea that the market is just going to change until we get to a more balanced housing market for every kind of housing, I don't think the market's going to just change on its own without some kind of push. And I don't think it has to be a huge push. I don't think we have all fees, or certainly not. But of making some kind of incentive for some of those low-cost, easy things, you know, get the low-hanging fruit. And by doing that, you start the conversation and say, hey, what else could we do to perhaps improve the marketability of this? That's a couple of different things I think we should look at.
So I came to a couple meetings last year, and if I remember correctly, but I may not, were ADUs part of a recommendation that the group made in last year? Or I mean, it's a conversation that we keep hearing.
Yeah, it was raised in some of our meetings, but as part of our recommendations, we did not address ADUs specifically.
Okay, because it's been in front of this council a little bit last year, and mm-hmm. we talked about it this year. I'd like to see us actually maybe take a serious look at what we're doing in that regard, what we haven't done, and what we can do. So I think that's something that we can do fairly quickly, at least have serious and substantive conversations about what we do with that. Mm-hmm. And then with regard to incentives, I would say it doesn't have to be financial. It could be permitting, expediting. It could just, there's certain things we could do. The zoning is a good idea too, right? So it seems to me that you have a council here that's supportive of where we're going. We just need to find ways to take some action that it's meaningful.
Yeah, I think we need to. Finally, I mean, we've talked about ADUs. Seemed like last year we talked about it every other month and nothing happened. But it is I think the state has a bill making ADUs easier to attain. But, and I think we need to get on it. If it is to some degree, it is a GMA issue because the hearings board says you're going through GMA through the back door. But if that's true, then we have to get ready for our new comp plan and have GMAs in it. So, you know,
ADUs, we kind of put them over to the side just because of all of the discussion, you know, and everything going on with them. And so there's still a lot of, you know, looking at where the state was going to go and all that kind of stuff. So we just decided to, and from last year's all of the discussion around them and everything, we put them off to the side and everything. The other thing for me is that when you're talking about them and aging in place, I certainly wouldn't go and put my mom or my wife's mom or my dad in one of them. They're 400, 600 square feet, and most of them are two stories high. And so, there's a market for them and everything, but it's off over here someplace, you know, and everything. It's really not under the umbrella of what we're really talking about right now and everything. And I didn't think that the whole incentive thing would actually really come up. But what I would suggest is that there are a lot of cities, counties, and states that have already developed incentive programs, all kinds of them. Some of them are for the developer, some of them are for the builder. Most of them really focus on what John was saying, was for remodeling, because that's really where the cost is. And we're really not, most of them that I saw anyway, and I didn't have a chance to really research all of it and everything, because there's a lot going on nationally with the whole visibility thing. But I would suggest that get researched out and really look at what the options are, if you're interested in that, of what others have done, and then we could basically just kind of adopt whatever somebody else has already done.
And as long as it works.
Huh?
As long as it works.
I mean, that's what we'd have to research and make phone calls and talk to people and all of that kind of stuff and everything. But where
I
this
think
all
our
really
bibliography in our annual report has some examples for your easy reference, but I'm sure you'll find a lot more that apply to this situation as well. And from our standpoint, anything that increases the opportunity for people to age in place, whether it's new housing or to abet current housing into a situation where it could be, we welcome that, we embrace that, because we know that there is a need.
I'd like to encourage more thought on the zoning aspects of it, because that way you would create communities. Mm-hmm. And with communities, people come out and interact. With communities, you have access by public transportation, which is a serious issue. Mm-hmm. And as far as marketability goes, they pointed out how much growth there is going to be in the aging group. Yeah. And that is a painless way of really helping the aging in place people quickly and in with one item.
And I kind of like the idea of looking at, I mean, I would break it down to communities. and I mean, our neighborhoods.
Yes, yes, it would be. That's how I was envisioning at, what I was talking
it down
about.
To neighborhoods.
Maybe even 125 homes or something. Or, like, you know, 50 to 125 yeah. units or something where they actually were a neighborhood and, yeah. and you and, walk in there.
And exactly what her was saying is focus on that mm-hmm. and everything. A lot of studies, and this was mentioned in our summit, where, and this is what has happened in Portland, whenever they developed the light rail system. Today, 20 years later, what do you see? You see within 3 or 4 blocks of those light rails where they are, that's what's really, really has been developed. And who's living there? Most of them are folks that are boomers and above, that so they can get to the transportation, or families with kids. So that would be something I think we would look at, is where is the best transportation that's being offered, and then what are those communities or those neighborhoods that would benefit from increased visibility standards or guidelines.
Has there been an attempt to create an inventory of current grant or funding programs for remodeling or retrofitting? I believe the veterans have a program that as a veteran becomes disabled, that they will, there is funding available for retrofitting restrooms, doorways, bedroom door jams, and that sort of thing. Have we done what is our best effort at a comprehensive inventory?
I don't think that we've done a comprehensive inventory. I think one of our presenters did a good job in outlining all the potential types of funding sources. Yes. And I suspect that would be the jumping off point to further drill down on that, which would include grants.
Sure. And I think in addition to looking at what we can do, and when I indicate a hesitation to incentivize, I mean financial incentives, there are land use incentives, and I'm sure that's what Ms. Olson was talking about as well. There are other ways we can help make it work, and it can be different ways for different circumstances. To Councillor Blom's point about multifamily, I do think that we're missing opportunities in providing, or at least providing tools for multifamily to develop probably ground floor units into housing for people who have disabilities of all different types. And we know that with rents so high, not only do some people have that barrier of physical difficulty, they also have financial difficulty. And part of that is there aren't enough rental units.
Yes.
So it's all integrated. The problem is integrated, and the solutions are going to be integrated as well. But having land use where more multifamily can be available, and you know, maybe doing code processes that we can expedite a little bit for accommodating this. So it's going to be sort of, I think, a holistic approach, but I'd be really interested in knowing what we have on the ground now so we can make better use of it immediately, get some immediate relief while we're thinking about what else we can do with this.
I've been interested, as Chuck, you've talked about, I mean, essentially the front door and the patio, you know, and I think it is a way that we are used to building homes. Concrete guy, I know that you do concrete the easiest way possible. So when you build a home, you're scared to have dirt close to the top of the foundation, and so it's easier to keep it from that foundation, and then you build up, and it's easier to have a step than it is to play around with all this grade. Well, I think we have got to somehow talk to the builders, and either we got to cut the foundation down deeper or something else, because it's all a grade and it's all done in one unit. But the people that do it, I think it comes out. But you got to start at the, you know, when you walk into the walk into, you know, a plot of land and decide, I'm going to build our homes with no steps. And so everything is built from there, whether it's a foundation, whether it's the front door or the patio, but it all all stops there or starts there. So I think somehow we've got to talk to the production builders and the mom and pop guys and say, all right, how do we get you to start from square one to think about, you know, this concept of no steps? It's a little harder, but I think, you know, it's the way to go. So
there might be an attractive way of making nice ramps, right, if they can't accommodate foundation at a certain level. The other thing I was going to say about the GMA and trying to backdoor the GMA, I think that we can work with WASAC, with the Washington Association of Counties, and make it a legislative priority to make changes in the GMA that make sense for this, especially for the aging community, because when you look at the silver tsunami, it's coming. And so they should be amenable to that. And if enough counties have the same problem, which they're going to, it's a fact of life.
And maybe ADUs isn't counted as your population. I mean, that'd be
increase. Whatever.
Yeah. These are all wonderful ideas, but in terms of new developments, the Building Industry Association keeps saying they cannot afford to build the kind of homes that we are wishing here. Mm-hmm. That it's not cost effective for them. They still want to build the big houses, two stories or more.
I actually do think that part of it is the footprint of a one-story home is not cost effective with the price of land and the zoning requirements, the codes now. If we changed some of those to create the communities with zoning, with zero lot lines, smaller dwelling units, I think it could be done. They're saying right now as it is we can't, and I understand that, because we've got setbacks, we've got you have to buy a lot of land to put a footprint of a single family dwelling on it. So that's why. It's simply right now not suited for it. But that's what we need to change. And that could be done fairly quickly. And I do think that that builders would respond, because it would sell. You make it affordable though, too. You don't build it with every possible bell and whistle for all of them. Some of them we can do, because some can afford it. So, you know, it's working to solve that.
Some of that extra cost, though, these are more, they can't afford it because some of what goes into this kind of housing is not standard off-the-shelf material that a builder is going to buy. For example, you're going to have a wider front door. Well, if that's wood and you're going wider than a standard unit, it's a specialized price. Where the market is going to catch up is things like door openers, easier arms, more not electronic, but mechanical arms. Right now, those are used more on commercial buildings. So you pay that commercial price. So as the demand for this housing increases, which we know it's going to, there will be more and more of these products easily purchased or in mass quantity by builders. And I know that the first of the wider front doors, I know this because this is associated with the business that my husband and I had, a wider door, they used to look very utilitarian. Well, now I see 36-inch doors with a beautiful light, meaning a glass panel in them that is for security. Sometimes there's an upper one and a lower one, so if you're in a wheelchair, you can see who's at your door. So all of this, as the market demands this, this gets to be more and more readily available, and the more readily available and the more produced it is, the prices will come down. So I think the market does not yet have the realization that we have an awful lot of people that are going to need this scaled down, but still high quality living facility, whether it's a small house or multifamily or whatever it is. So if the market in some way starts to take care of itself when the builders realize that there is a big market here. And they need to remember who has the money.
Very well said. I think that's the key. It's always about the money, and yes, we do know that the folks that are retiring, the baby boomers, have a big percentage of the money to spend. And I think that every one of you has a wonderful understanding of the challenges that we've looked at. And in our bibliography at the end of our report, I was really amused when Mark was talking about concrete, because probably the best reference I can give you is a website called Concrete Change. And that's a national website. They've done a lot of work. And I think also with incentives, we don't have a lot of money, but sometimes it's not just about money. Mike Selig from the building department has worked with us and our housing group, and we talked with him about these changes that Mark talked about. And when you go in for permitting, you also have to pay many times for engineered drawings, which cost a great deal more. And Mike talked about how they've successfully produced drawings that can just be used,
templates,
pre-approved, yeah, for the wider doorways, for the lower foundations, and all those. So that would be a very, very good idea, those pre-approved plans. The ADUs is interesting. My daughter recently moved up to Port Angeles, and that is in the rain shadow. So it's this lovely area up across from Vancouver Island. There are a lot of retired people there, and guess what? There are ADUs on almost every property I saw. My daughter has two on hers. And so where there are retired people, it seems there is more thought to ADUs, and they're being done very tastefully and well. Also, to speak to what Eileen was saying, yes, it's difficult to find a lot that's dimensioned properly for these kinds of houses, but we have redevelopment also. In my own personal case study, the house that we bought when my husband became disabled and ill was a redevelopment of a property that had a mobile home on it. probably had been there from the 60s or 70s, completely deteriorated, non-functional. The mobile home came off. Now there are two new accessible houses on that old property. Initially, it was platted into four for some reason, but then the bust came and the four lots sat. So when they went back to do the development, they recognized they wanted to do something different. And then to talk about marketability and the market being anxious for a product like this, my daughter was watching the internet for me because there was really nowhere that we could find to move to. The first day this house came on the market, we made arrangements to see it, first day. I had no idea what I was even looking for or what it needed to be. But we went out with a realtor, opened the door. Wow, this is perfect. And he said, as we were just standing there, he says, well, do you want me to write up an offer? The same day. I mean, this is not a paradigm that we understand from the past. It used to be, you think about it, you think about an offer, you look at the price. And then I found out, oh no, you don't just offer what they're asking. You have to incentivize for the seller to want to sell it to you. And you have to act very quickly. And so we were fortunate. There were lots of backup offers, too. A lot of people wanted to buy it. Even after we closed and moved in, people would drive by, stop in our driveway, and say, what? Did you buy this house? We wanted to buy it. We saw it being built. Do you know if there's any more? So there's a huge, huge market. Mm-hmm. But as Mark says, it's different for builders to do things differently. So we need to help to make that happen. And the Commission on Aging, all of us individually try to reach out. Habitat's been a great interest for us because Habitat architects would like to change the plans now and build accessible housing. Because as we found out from Chuck, you don't have to be aging to need an accessible house. Okay. Chuck has been in his wheelchair since he was 19 years old, and his dad had to figure out how to get him back in the house with a board of plywood. And so, yeah, there's a lot of great examples, and I know that Mike Selig has been trying to say something. Mark, if you could call on him.
I think a lot can be accomplished with existing floor plans with two-story homes just on having zero step entry, the patio accessible, zero, and one bathroom that was accessible. Visibility is such a challenge. I learned that in no uncertain terms when I hosted Thanksgiving dinner for my aging mother-in-law and mother. It was a challenge to accommodate them. And there are a lot of existing floor plans that can be adapted with relatively low cost, just some of these standard details we've talked about before. The builders can do that. The marketability is a tremendous asset. That's one of the main incentives that green builders use in getting certified homes built in Clark County. There's one builder who more than a year ago went to all green built standard certified homes. He doesn't advertise anymore because people want these homes. They understand indoor air quality, they understand the benefits of these homes, and he's able to get the cost down there because he's done it a few times. So there is a great opportunity to do at least a little something in a pretty standard way to most of the floor plans that are already out there. And try something when a builder wants to do a little more.
The thing that you really have to remember here, and we don't know, is that not only whenever you build a home like mine or Marianne's that is very accessible, that home is here for, what, 80, 90, 100 years? How many different families then benefit? I mean, there's a ratio of benefit that happens with that, that, you know, we tend to forget about that because you're focusing on the individual, you know, at that particular time. But whenever I'm gone out of my home, you know, the next family is going to definitely benefit from everything of that my home offers. So there's a real benefit in that. And then as that's been discussed and everything, we just can't forget the cost ratio savings of a person staying in their home as long as possible. I just moved my wife's mom out of her place. And it is, I have learned that there is a real psychological thing that happens when you move that person out of the neighborhood that they were in for 30 years.
Yeah.
And then you put them in this place that they don't know anybody, and then they don't want to go out and meet anybody. And so there's a real psychological thing that ends up happening here. That I was looking at the physical aspects of getting her out of this place, because it had steps and all of this kind of stuff and everything. It wasn't safe for her. And we got her into a place that was safe for her physically and everything. But psychologically, we have seen her really kind of shut down. And so now then we're working at getting her out and everything. So there's that piece of the puzzle that we have to just continue to talk about and get it out there. You know, I think it's extremely, extremely important.
So you've given us some good feedback today, and we need to know from you what you would like us to do next. I mean, we've given you the recommendations. You can say thank you, we'll implement them, and we'll see you next year. See what you have to say about supportive services. So we need some direction from you following this. If we can be helpful on housing, we're happy to do that. We also very much would like your feedback as far as our proposed series for next year, which we intend to delve deeply into supportive services. So we're kind of assuming you like our work plan approach that we use this year and that we intend to use next year, but it's always better not to assume. So if that's a wrong assumption, we need to hear from you.
No, I think that, we're going to talk about several of these at board time or work sessions or whatever, ADUs and things like that. So I think as we go into these, then we'll definitely let you know. And as we, some of the things that you've talked about, and as we get into them one at a time through the year, we'll bring them here also.
And some of these issues are issues that we got a heightened awareness from our comp plan update. There was a lot of input from that. So much of what we've talked about here, this is not the first time we've heard it. Implementing or facilitating is something that whatever we can do, we'll have to figure that out. But be assured that much of this it's kind of on the back burner as we talk about the comp plan, because if we talk about changing land use, that we're required to follow a long process for that. That doesn't mean all land use. We may have some room in between existing law. I think these are things we're talking about and we'll continue to figure out what direction the county is going to go.
I just remember a tsunami is on its way. About 20% of people in Clark County will be 65 years and older. In our report, it says that's the demographic makeup of Florida. That's going to be here in Clark County.
I wish we got the weather, too.
Yes.
Without the weather.
Yes, Julie.
So we, you know, the previous commission had, you guys have been around since 2012, and the purpose is to do your work here and to produce recommendations on ways we can implement policy to deal with this aging in Clark County. And so that's our responsibility now. I don't want to have you come out here year after year, month after month, and keep doing your work and have us do nothing about it. So I would sort of like to see the council actually take some action, whatever that might be, that's meaningful and moves the ball forward to deal with what we're talking about. And it's going to be here, whether we like it or not. So I think it's up to us to actually take some of your recommendations under consideration and figure out what we do to move forward. So that would be my
One final question. This was the first year where we really drilled down on one topic, and we as a group feel comfortable in approaching our work that way. So we're hoping that you like that approach as well. Mm-hmm. Does that sound reasonable?
Yeah.
I would just say, the benefit of folks on the one topic, you know, I work in housing, and so everywhere I went last year, I feel like people were talking about the Commission on Aging, just all different spheres. People were talking about the work that you were doing. And I think by having that very single topic specific focus, I think that's what generated that. So I want to commend the group for that. I mean, it was really everywhere. It was, hey, did you hear the Commission on Aging is doing this? And oh, someone's always speaking at the Commission on Aging. So, yeah, great job.
So on February 23rd, some of us are going to Olympia and browbeat them, so we practiced on you.
When you go to Olympia, are you going to let them think there that it's their idea?
Is that what you're suggesting? And March 21st launches our supportive services focus with our first speaker. You see the handout back there. So we'll be doing this all year long, and next year when we meet, we'll be giving you some of our ideas on that topic. Are there any comments from the public?
I wonder, I'm not hearing anything about people that rent. Any people that... Is it on? Okay. Anyway, I didn't hear about renters or people that might be challenged with income, because not everybody can build a house or buy a house.
And I think you're right, you did not hear that. That was not part of our recommendations, although our fact-finding this year certainly spotlighted that as a need. But we just didn't have to deal with that in this venue. But it is not something that has escaped our interest.
Do you know when it might be addressed?
No, I don't, and I don't think anybody else does. It seems to be something that's pretty out of hand, if I could be blunt about it. And I don't know what the next step on that would be, frankly.
We actually had a situation that a new community opened for people who were over the age of 62, I think. And when our housing folks went over there to look at it, it was really not accessible. It did not meet the standards of visitability. And so it's easy to say that you have rental housing and market it as such when it is not really. So we need to make sure that people understand, because our recommendations are very basic and simple and really don't cost a lot more. So we're hoping that just word of mouth and the help of the building department will work in our favor.
I think it's kind of interesting. I went to a brand new place, I think it was 4 years ago, called Senior Living, which I don't know if you could get into any of these places in a wheelchair, but they call it Senior Living. They all had kitchens, and there wasn't a grocery store for 10 miles, if you ask me. So I don't know where they got their food, but you know, it's kind of interesting.
Well, this was what Marion is bringing up is this was very interesting because look at this place, absolutely brand new. And they're filling it up right now. And the lady who, she moved in And she then really started looking, she looked at the bathroom. And the toilet was like one of these 13-inch high toilets. I don't even know where they found these. And the unit that they put in for the tub had was the cheapest unit that you could get that they put in. So she then went to management to say, I need a higher toilet so I can set it and get off of it. And I also would like to have some handrails or some grab bars for getting out of the tub. And so they said, no problem, we can absolutely go and do that for you. However, you're going to have to pay for it. So that is what we're talking about here. And we have absolutely hundreds and hundreds of units that have been built and that are in the process of being built, that they are building them as cheaply as they can, and then they get modified as they go along, and that modification is then put onto the renter when it should have been done. I mean, this is a 62 and above place, and you would think, well, wait a minute, you know, you're building it for a certain age group.
I think we get what you're saying. We have one more comment on there, Jeff. Bob?
I have a million comments, but I just want to point out the first thing Mark said, Mr. Wolf, was about rating when you buy a house. How is it rated for spending the rest of your life after the fact? Can you get your grocery, walk to the grocery store and get groceries and bring it back? Okay, you might be too old to drive your car if you're still around. Most, or I would hope that it's not after drive. And I think if there were just a rating when you buy a house, you get an energy efficiency rating. How about a rating for rating to live the rest of your life? Get on the scale. That'd be something that a city require buildings to do or implement a program. You know, it's a million thing.
Yeah, you'll spare us the other number, I guess. All right, thank you. One other final piece of business just for our group. I'm appointing a bylaw committee of Herb, Chuck, and Pat so we can begin looking toward next year and how to structure ourselves. So hearing no other comments, we are adjourned. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mark.
Thank you very much. Good to see you.
Thank you. Hey there.